You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Rabe's Vietnam War plays, The Basic Training of Pablo Hummel, Streamers, The Orphan, and Sticks and Bones have won many awards, including a Tony for Best Play. Now he's returned to the subject of that war in Girl by the Road at Night, a novel of Vietnam from Simon & Schuster. Philip Caputo, who knows something about that era, gave it a rave review in a recent Sunday New York Times book review. There's also a new production by the Potomac Theater Project of his play, A Question of Mercy, which is not about Vietnam. It's on stage at the Atlantic Theater, too, until this coming Sunday, and I'm very pleased that all of this brings David Rabe back to our show today. Hello.
I'm glad to be here.
You've written many plays and novels on other subjects over the years. Why did you want to return to the subject of Vietnam now?
In a sense, it returned to me. I just, you're not quite in charge of these things. You're in charge of what you sit down with, but I started thinking a lot about it. I had a lot of it written. I wrote a lot of it shortly after I came back in about 1970, 71.
You just let the thing sit there?
Yeah, I couldn't finish it. I lost faith and confidence in my ability, not in the ideas, but my ability to finish it. And then I went off and did the plays, starting, writing. And then recently went back and looked at what I had and then was encouraged very much by my agent and editor, Simon Schuster.
Did you find it easier to write plays at that point in your life?
Yeah, I did, for some reason.
They're all dialogue.
Yeah, and they're sprints. You go pretty quickly from, relatively speaking, from beginning to end. There was something about a novel that I don't quite understand it, but I couldn't face the longer haul of it, which I now enjoy. The sort of long slog of writing a novel by yourself and having some input. But in this case, it was a lot of work to do, but I did have a lot of it.
In the case of a play, you write it, and then other people, somebody else directs it, different people perform it, and it stops being yours. In the case of a novel, there are only two people involved in the collaboration, you and the reader.
Yeah, I find that very one of the things I like about the novel, or I keep telling myself I really like, is that how patient it is. It just sits there waiting for someone. It'll wait 30 years, 40 years, hopefully not that long in this case. But there's something I really like about that. And it doesn't change and it doesn't close, and you can find it in an old bookstore or a new bookstore. So there's something consoling in that in a certain way.
As I remember, you were drafted in 1965 and sent to Vietnam.
Right.
Did you keep a journal when you were there? Were you thinking of yourself as a writer at that time?
I was thinking of myself. I was aspiring to be a writer. I had worked on a play. I'd done some prose work in college, literary magazine stuff. And I kept a journal until I got to Vietnam, and then I didn't from then on. I kept it. I kept one on the boat going over, and we were taken over by boat in an early part, but I just stopped doing it.
And Norman Mailer kind of insisted on going into the infantry because he knew that a novel would come out of it, The Naked and the Dead.
Right, of course, yeah. No, I mean, I've read that about it. I did not insist on the infantry, and I didn't end up there. I was drafted. I was put into a medical unit, and I stayed there. There was a point of time where I felt guilty about being there in that capacity and tried to look into transferring, which was, everybody, the sergeants and everybody I talked to said, you're nuts. And, and plus it's just not easy. You can't do it, really. You have to re-up. So it never happened. And then I came to my senses.
Could this have been done as a play? Did you ever consider that?
No. No. I felt, no, it would not in my mind. I mean, it was always a novel. And normally the ideas show up as whatever they are. It's like I don't think I've ever taken an idea that was presented itself as a play and tried to make a novel or story out of it, or vice versa.
But is this something you've done before, begun a project, left it for years, and then returned to it to finish it?
Yeah, I actually do it fairly common. This was a very long gap, but Streamers, for example, had a lot of gaps in it. I wrote parts of it, and then 3 or 4 years later wrote more, and it was about a 7 or 8 year period of writing in which I only wrote, very few hours, but I couldn't do it until I was the time passed.
Well, what was it like returning to something that you'd written as a young man? Because you, I'm assuming, are a very different person nowadays. Well,
you know, it's startling in a way, and you, it was the first read through what I had to go by, because you remember a lot, and it prompts other memories, and it's on one hand, it's your youth, you know, which is always something that calls,
and every once in a while, you come upon a phrase and say, "Gee, that's pretty good."
Yeah,
I didn't know
there was
I was
a lot
capable
of what I was saying, and that's pretty startling, and that was very bold to write that, but you know, and why did I lose faith? But I sort of know what happened in the areas, and I just didn't have the. I had a lot of work to do on it, a lot of rewriting, a lot of pruning, a lot of rephrasing, and then certain sections to fill in, and one very key section, which is what I think kept me from writing it.
Well, did reading it make you remember what it was like when you were a younger David Rabe?
Yeah. You know, a lot of things come back, and then you remember other things, and then there's a kind of mix of things that you don't know if you're exactly remembering or...
And then you know things from after.
Yeah. There was the time gap, I think the notes and the fragments give the book an immediacy and a vitality, and then the time that has gone by gave it the overall arc of it, a kind of, I don't want to call it serenity exactly, but a calm, a kind of structural perspective on the whole experience.
Your protagonist, Joe Whitaker, is a young soldier from the Midwest who, when the book opens, is about to be sent to Vietnam, and he doesn't really know much about the place. We're talking 65. This is really early in the war.
Well, 66 is when he's drafted in 65 and ends up over there in 66, which is what happened to me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming a lot of this is based on your real experiences.
It is, yes. It was... Very early, no one knew anything. When I was drafted, Vietnam was not an issue in 65. While I was in basic, suddenly the sergeant started talking about it, and I can still remember people in this formation one morning, and people were saying, he was saying, you know, they give you this lecture in the morning and before you go out and do whatever task you're going to do that morning of training. And he was saying, you better learn what we're teaching you because some of you boys are going to die in Vietnam. And guys were saying, where? What? What's he talking about? But we learned very quickly where it was and what was going on. And
the rest of the country was in, at least according to the book, because before shipping out, Joe uses a weekend pass to go to Washington, D.C., and he wanders through an anti-war march, and he doesn't know what to think about it.
No, it was like I've never double-checked. It's based on a march, certainly, that was there and a peace protest. I mean, a protest march, and it was one of the very early ones, I'm sure. And by then, you're in the army, you're going. My own political thinking wasn't very clear. I had a certain belief that I should go at that point, and you're in. There's a momentum to being in the army that sends you, and they you know, you want to do what you're supposed to do. And so I went over. But the march was very kind of odd and exotic in some ways. And
well, but there are also protesters. There are people, American Nazis.
Yeah, there were Nazis.
And Joe seems equally indifferent to both sides.
Yeah, no, he just feels he's in his own position is that he's going and that he doesn't particularly want the support of Nazis, which is what they were supporting, claiming to support the troops going. And he feels kind of envious and abused, of mistreated, you know, neglected and misunderstood by the people who are in protest, that none of them quite know the situation. He doesn't know the situation. He just knows he's going.
Well, what he knows is that there are women wearing buttons that say, "Make love, not war."
Right.
And that appeals
to... He's trying
to
take advantage of that, but he doesn't get very far.
I've spoken to any number of journalists who went to Vietnam to cover the war, initially thinking that the war was something that they supported, and then they were turned around by what they witnessed. I suspect that's the same thing happened with you.
Well, it's some of it, yes, but it didn't. You witness certain things, but it didn't register until I was back.
Because Joe doesn't really go into combat.
No, he's in this actually doing a lot of construction, which is sort of what we did the first four or five months. And I mean that a lot of the book, which deals with the Vietnamese woman or girl in it, you know, that was a big challenge to write and try to understand and write from her perspective.
Was that in the original version as well?
A lot of it was, yes.
The novel alternates scenes told by, from Joe's point of view with others from the life of Lan, this young Vietnamese woman working as a prostitute servicing American soldiers. Was she based on anybody you knew?
Yeah, based on a number of people. One, or, you know, they were there and you met them. And
she was forced into the profession after her father is killed and her family breaks up. And she works at a car wash that doubles as a brothel.
Right.
They were really such places?
Yes, yes, they were.
And
they, yes.
You were going to say something else?
No, I'm just saying, yes, there were. And it was, again, I think—
A car wash.
A car wash, yeah. And which was just a gravel, you know, driveway in which Vietnamese kids washed the car, basically, or Jeep truck.
In her spare time, she reads a Vietnamese epic poem called The Tale of Q. What's the significance of that poem?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do when I was over there is you're desperate to try to understand what's going on with these people. Because I was surrounded by, you know, South Vietnamese mainly, and most of them were not in any way trying to kill us. I wanted to know something, and I learned there was this book which was considered their Shakespeare, and I've since learned that, you know, that people— It's embedded in their brains. I don't know about now, but then, you know, they could people who couldn't read could recite great sections of it. And it's the story. It follows the misfortunes of a young woman who ends up partly in a brothel at one point.
I'm always fascinated by that. There are many Japanese who know the tale of Genji. I've met Germans who can quote. I once had a guy painting my house who quoted long poems by Schiller, for example.
Right.
And we don't have that in this country.
We kind of did at one point, but certainly no more. I don't.
And who would it be? A Melville?
Oh, you mean to quote Americans? Yes, who would it be? Well, some people quote Frost. And there's no epics. And Whitman, I guess. Whitman would be a good one.
My guest is David Rabe, whose latest work is a novel called Girl by the Road at Night. It is published by Simon & Schuster, and you're pretty much devoting all of your writing these days to fiction. Have you given up writing plays altogether?
No, I haven't. But I am kind of in love with writing novels at this point. But I have a play that's probably going to be done in not this coming season, but the one after. They schedule far ahead these days. And another play that I'm hoping to get on that. And some things in the works, but I am also more absorbed right now rewriting a different novel.
Well, in the plays that made you famous were all produced by Joe Papp, weren't they?
Right. Well, yes.
And unfortunately, there's nobody like Joe Papp around anymore. Is that part of the problem?
I think it is for some of my stuff. You know, he was unique, and my plays at that time were very confrontational, and Joe loved confrontation. He welcomed those plays, and I don't know. Everybody else in New York or all the regionals had turned them all down at that back then. So,
because they were seen as anti-war statements?
I don't know why. No, I just think because they didn't fit, actually. They didn't really fit into the premise of an anti-war statement. They were a little too complicated. There was some thought, say, Pavel Hummel, that the army had was too appealing in it, even though the outcome isn't very good. And that Sticks and Bones, that the young man who comes back is just too unsympathetic. He's too fierce and demanding and ultimately insatiable in what he wants. So I think a lot of it was they didn't know how to fit it in into their – but it wasn't that they weren't – in some sense, they weren't sufficiently simple enough in their anti-war premises, I guess.
They wanted their hero to be somebody who's totally sympathetic, not somebody who might be distorted by his life experience.
And the guy in Six of Bones is pretty distorted.
I do want to mention the revival of A Question of Mercy by the Potomac Theater Project, which can be seen at the Atlantic Stage 2 on West 16th Street until this coming Sunday, August 1st. I understand that you had nothing to do with the production, but can we talk about the play a bit?
Sure.
It's about assisted suicide. It's set in 1990 during the AIDS crisis and based on a doctor's journal. Do you think that play is as relevant today as when you wrote it? Because now we do have that cocktail which is keeping in a lot of people who are HIV positive alive.
Well, I don't think, you know, the play is specifically about someone with AIDS and who's dying, suffering, and makes this request of his partner and some friends and a doctor that he be assisted in suicide. And so I don't think it is about AIDS in that sense, but I don't think that, you know, it could be another disease in the way of the story. But the story unfolds, and it belongs to that time period. It was based on this journal that I read. I read this. It's in the New York Times. Actually, it was in the magazine when it first came out, and I just found the juxtaposition of so many of the elements very powerful. So in a sense, the fact that there's been, you know, improvements in the healthcare aren't really the issue.
Because it could just as easily be about somebody with cancer.
Yeah. I mean, the real issue in the play is this: can you organize this in a way that's civilized? And then about should it be legal, you know, and should it be? And how does all that affect the people involved?
People want more information about that. We have ticket information about A Question of Mercy on our show page at WNYC.org. Just one more thing. Your wife, Jill Clayburgh, and your daughter, Lily Rabe, are both actors. And in fact, Lily is starring in Shakespeare in the Park's The Merchant of Venice this summer. Gotten wonderful reviews.
Yes.
Does that feel like a homecoming of sorts, since Joe Papp was so instrumental in your career?
It is very, I don't know what the word is, emotional. I won't use a specific emotion. But
well, he had said that producing your work was one of the most important things he had done at the Public Theater.
Right, he did say that, yeah.
It must have made you feel good.
It was powerful, and it came late when he was quite ill. When he said it, someone asked him a question, and he and I were speaking, but we're not working together at that point. We'd had a falling out, but so it was very complicated when I heard that he'd said that, and it still is. But seeing the Shakespeare in the Park, which of course is his invention, and his soul's down there somewhere. So to have Lily in it is very powerful and satisfying.
Do you think that if you came along today, that it would be really difficult to get your work produced, the economics of theater being what it is?
You know, I don't think it would. Since I had such difficulty then, frankly, I imagine it would be difficult now too, and maybe worse. There are people there, though. There are theaters that do work that's bold and demanding, and you know. So it's hard to say. I would hope there'd be someone that would do them. You know, like I say, it was very difficult then. I was really, those plays were turned down almost everywhere.
Although since then, you've been hailed as one of America's greatest living playwrights. The latest work is a novel, Girl by the Road at Night. It's published by Simon & Schuster. David Rabe, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Leonard. My pleasure.